Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like wake up, brush teeth. Baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
I'm Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags!
Get on the grid, sports grid. Morenci Unfiltered, the podcast. I am Gabriel Morenci. It's been an awesome week of shows this week. Under these difficult circumstances, we're doing our best to produce as much content as we can. And shout out to everybody at SportsGrid for putting the hard work in right now from their homes. But that's the key. We're all in our homes. At least we have homes. We've been bringing on the guys, the crew from Capper's Corner and the regulars from the Meadowlands that we miss so much. And we all see how important and how big sports is a part of our lives. But the key is staying safe right now, so we're alive to watch sports. And guys, continue to stay inside, so eventually the lockdowns will be eased and we can get back to a more normal routine. But I'm very excited to wrap up the week with a man that it was one of my favorite shows I've ever done. I've done a lot of shows over the last 18 years with a lot of different people, but very fond memories of spending Friday nights at the Team 990 studios in Montreal talking boxing with Russ Amber, and the Iceman John Scully, of course, was the third colleague and partner in crime. The coach, Russ Amber, steps up and in. Coach, it's been too long. We speak online, but it's great to catch up with you. How you been?
I've been well, Gabe, and it's great to hear from you as well. Great memories of that, and I always thought your passion for all sports and boxing was special, and it was always fun to talk to you. So you're right. It has been way too long, and I'm glad we're getting this chance to catch up on, albeit under, strange circumstances, if you will.
Well, I guess it's the only way I can catch up to you. You're a big shot now. You're always you're on the road, championship fights. I'm saying this is the most I've seen you online. And, I was trying to be nice and encourage people to help homeless people, and Russ Amber's taking shots at me online.
It was easy, bro. You were just setting those up. Come on. It was like you were inviting it. I couldn't resist. It's been a while. I hadn't gotten a chance to take a dig at you, and everything's been so serious online, and everyone's, freaking out, and things that are online of what some of the stupidity that's being said online is just making me crazy. I can't believe that these people have freedom of speech to be able to write this insanity, and you're basically telling people to put their lives in danger, and it's just making me nuts. So it was good to get a shot in at you and have a laugh.
Yeah, I've sometimes said, I think it was Kent Brockman in The Simpsons said, I've told you before, people, democracy simply does not work. That's Kent Brockman has stated. Yeah, I've said it, and I don't even mind. I'm not, I'm at the point of my career where I'm like, oh, I don't want to offend anybody. I've said it before.
Like, Florida should not be allowed to vote in elections. You know what I mean? Like, they lose. They're lucky they're allowed to drive. Like, it's one of those deals where, like, we need to take away everything from you or just, you know, separate and become your own deal. You know what I'm saying?
You know, it makes, I mean, I can even understand how people can have a diametrically opposed views on things. And I mean, that's proven in human nature. You see, two people can be standing on each street corner and they witness an accident and you'll get two different versions of what happened. You know, like, I mean,
debate is good. And it's good. It makes people smarter, but we don't live in debate now, right? We just live in jackass culture.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that when you start, especially news feeds, people that are supposed to be telling you, are supposed to be relaying information to you, the truth, the best way to do things, the safest way, because that's who we turn to. And I mean, our generation has done, you know, did that as well. Like, you looked at the news to get your information. I mean, my father used to stand up and watch the news on TV. You know, this was important to see the news at night, to see what was happening. And now it seems like news channels are out there just picking a political side and doing the opposite of what the other is doing. And I think that is unhealthy in and of itself, because you're just doing it for ratings. And it's become now where news stations have become shock jocks. You know, like, how stupid can I say something just to get a rile out of somebody and bring
everything's entertainment
up?
Now, coach, right? That's what it is.
Yeah.
Everything's entertainment. It's not news anymore. Right,
no,
you want
not,
news,
no.
Go to PBS, and no one watches it, right? And it's dry, but that's the way it's supposed to be. News isn't supposed to be fun and entertaining.
No,
you know what I mean?
News isn't supposed to be read
by some hot chick in a skirt with her breast popping out. Like, you know what I'm saying?
It's supposed to be the news.
Like, exactly. This is what's going on, and you're informed. But, you know, hey, times have changed, and it's funny because I wanted to bring this up. It's amazing how fast time goes, isn't it, Russ, as we get to this stage of our life. Right now, and I see the pictures. Our boy Clam Chatter posts the pictures when he was at the gym, and you know, he's looking dapper and young, and you are. And it always strikes me, I never forget the day, Russ. And you know, me and Russ did boxing shows, but Russ, big sports fan and passionate Montreal sports fan. And I remember once I was at Olympic Stadium, and you came in with a young kid, and you know, he was probably about 12, 13 years old. And I sat with you guys. Remember, we watched the game. I forget who they played, but we sat together. And that youngster, that youngster was David Lemieux. And
I remember
you. I said, "Who was the kid, Russ?" He said, "He's one of my fighters." He was probably about 15, I think, right at the time.
Oh, I didn't even know if he was that old. I was going to say he's probably 13, 14. Yeah,
he was a teenager. I remember though. You know, he had sort of like a tank top on, and he looked like a tough kid. And you told me, you said, "This kid's special." You said, "There's something about this kid. He's special." And it's amazing to me. And then I see pictures of him now. And I'm like, man, I watched a baseball game with this kid when he wasn't allowed to drink. He was drinking like a soda with us.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You know, I think back on my career and, you know, I just celebrated a birthday in March. And I mean, it's insane that I said I'm 59 years old. You know, like, that's incredible. And
you're doing
exactly
great. You look great.
Bro, 59 years old. I started coaching when I was 18. I mean, I just can't fathom where the years have gone. And when I start telling the stories, I realize that 10, 15 minutes isn't enough time for me to tell you my career in a condensed.
Well, that's
version.
Why you know, like, I want, that's why I'm so happy I get you on the podcast right now. So there won't even be enough time in the less than an hour that we have, but. And one thing, too, and I'll ask you some stuff, but one of my favorite lines ever, and Russ, 59 years old, looking great, the energy, you've laid better than you've ever looked. And I'll never forget, you know, I was on the road a lot, and I'm in hotels all the time, and Russ was, and I remember I asked Russ once. I said, "Russ, I see you on TV. You look so refreshed and stuff." I said, "You know, I'm dying on the road here." And he said, "Well, I'm not drinking and doing cocaine in my hotel room until 5 in the morning every night." Russ wasn't insinuating to a blow, but it was just sort of, he said, "Our lifestyles are a little different, Gabe, right?" He said, "Go to bed earlier and maybe you won't feel sick in the morning when you're on TV." It was funny. That's why you're a coach, right? Like, I'm sure you've had to tell fighters, "Hey, well, if you're an idiot, that's why you feel this way."
Yeah. To me, I turned traveling into a science, into an art. Like, I've been for the last 5 years, Gabe, which have been fantastic. I mean, I'm so blessed with the career that I've had and the opportunities that have presented themselves for me and that I've been able to take advantage of. But in just the last 5 years, I flew over 100,000 miles each year. So I've flown over 500,000 miles in the last 5 years. And I basically, in my house, I used to come in and put my luggage that I would travel with basically just near the door and just change it as I needed, because I was leaving a week later. You know, there was no unpacking. I had everything down to what I needed, all the boxing stuff that I needed, my pool cue, which stayed in my bag. And, you know, that I just had everything done. I knew when to get to the airport, how to go, where to go in. I knew this thing down perfectly, to the point where I fell in love with it. I fell in love with traveling. I fell in love with hotels, and I fell in love with
you love the life.
You know,
you love the life.
I loved it. It was perfect. You leave the hotel room, you know, with the bed undone and your clothes everywhere, and and then you come back, and like the elves have come in, and it's beautiful again. It's great.
You know, and people ask me, Russ, too. They see me on Twitter bitching. I'm like, man, took me 2 hours to get out of Giant Stadium after the Giant game, and you know, oh, I've done 16 hours of shows today, and I'm wiped out. And people are like, oh, you know, I would never be able to live in that traffic. And I'm thinking, yeah, because life would be more exciting if I was sitting on my couch all day, right?
Yeah,
you
right.
Know, that's,
exactly.
That's the whole thing. Like, there's time to rest, and so I wanted to ask you that. And for, you know, people know your story, but I want to sort of go over that. And I didn't even get to the snooker. And Russ is a world class snooker player as well. So, you know, it starts, goes back, you know, you get into boxing, and we bring up Clam Chowder, who a lot of our listeners know, great guy, Clam Chowder. But Clam Chowder was an aspiring pugilist when he was a youngster, a boxer as well. And I was always fascinated. I love history, Russ. And I love, like, I get a kick. Like, I just, like, stood when I moved to Toronto. I used to stand outside of Maple Leaf Gardens, just sort of like at the back door. I just think, you know, Ali came out of this door. You know what I mean? I just think. And I put myself back in time. And I was always fascinated about, like, the gym that Ali stayed at and worked at in Toronto when he came to Canada. So I wanted to ask you about the history of the Olympic gym in Montreal, and how important was the Olympics in Montreal? Because we talk about the boxing that came out of that Olympics, the 1976 games in Montreal. Was it the Olympic gym before that? Was that gym created? Like, where did the Olympic gym come from?
The Olympic Boxing Club was named Olympic Boxing Club even before the Olympics were held. So
in
was
Montreal. Now, where
Olympic
was it?
Boxing Club.
Where was it?
It was
in Montreal?
It was on Park Avenue, right between Bernard and St. Viateur. It was upstairs of the old Rialto Theater.
Yeah.
I don't know if that narrows it down for you, right? The Olympic Club was you know, what the Kronk
These boxing clubs. Sorry, Lou. I was just going to say, it's sort of like the Ali one, the one in Toronto. I think it was on Eglinton Street. Not Eglinton. What was the street? It'll pop in my head. Reuben Carter was there, too. But, you know, in Vegas, I noticed that the boxing gyms, they're usually in shadier parts of town, or the artsy part of town, or the bar, like where the dive bars are. You know what I mean? I noticed that. Like,
That's changed. That's changed.
Now they're strip malls. They build their own ones. I see it in Vegas
all the time.
Exactly.
That's right.
So
that's
Park Avenue, like, old school. So who was like the influencers? Who was like the kingpins that came out of there?
The kingpin out of there was probably one of the biggest attractions Montreal had ever had, especially at that time, was Donato Paduano. Paduano was the king. You know, he was the guy who went to the Olympics for Canada. He was the guy who, when he got married, the procession of his marriage went down Park Avenue, okay? And the people, the Italians, everybody was out, you know, for the wedding of Donato Paduano, whose nickname was L'Ange du Ring, Angel of the Ring. And, you know, he was the big star that came out of there. He had a big following. He was a big attraction. He was promoted by Regis Levesque, managed and trained by Roger Larrivee. He was the guy, and the Olympic Club was what the equivalent of what the Kronk Gym was in the States. You know, like, that was the powerhouse that it was. Everybody who was anybody trained out of the Olympic Club. When you came to Montreal, you trained at the Olympic Club. You know, Vinnie Curdle trained at the Olympic Club. All the greats, Clyde Gray, everyone came around town, trained at the Olympic Club. They all trained at the Olympic Club. That was the gym. And you're right. That was during a time when all boxing gyms
were not businesses. They were boxing gyms, okay? And people used to look for places that they could get cheap, that they could put a ring in, hang a few bags, and they wanted to build, to have a gym where they could train fighters. That was the idea. And when you went into one of those gyms, 70% of the people in that gym were competitors, whether amateurs or pros, they were fighters. The other 30% were either ex-fighters who weren't fighting anymore and they were still training. And then you had another 20%, maybe even less, who were just doing it because they loved to be around boxing and they wanted to train and hit the bag and they wanted to be around the fighters, and they were in there. Now it became...
That's so cool, though. You're into the billiards and pool. Like, that's what I just think of, like, when I think of boxing. Sort of, yeah, like above the pool hall. Downstairs, they were hustling pool. You had the boxers upstairs.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, yeah. Exactly. 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 And but now it's switched. Now it's become mainstream. Now it's become a fashion lifestyle. Now we open
soccer
up moms nice,
coming
pretty
in,
places.
Training, ding, ding, ding. That's how they pay their bills, right?
And that, yeah, that's how they pay the bills. And that's why they rent these beautiful studios and it's nice places and they decorate it. When I had my gym, Gabe, we used to put pictures up on the wall with tape. You know, someone gave you a poster. We used to put it up with tape. It hung in the gym. Now they're framing everything beautifully, and it's exquisite art. Nice boxing memorabilia is hanging there and everything. And now you walk into places, and you walk into places. You'd be lucky in some places if you find somebody who's a fighter. There's 100 people in there training and doing fitness classes, and someone's giving instructions, and they're hitting the bag, and they're screaming out instructions. Come on, let's go, hit it, bud. But there's not a fighter in the joint. Not a fighter in the joint, you know?
What do you think of the modern training? Like, is it too much? Because, you know, is it too much, like, with the data? Are you, like, a computer guy and all this? Or, well, let me ask you about Lomachenko. How sophisticated is his training, or is it old school?
Well, it's old Russian school, so there's a difference, right?
So in other words, it's like 100 times hardcore than anyone else.
Yeah, correct. It's based on the former Soviet system, okay, which was all based on science, okay? Everything was done for a reason. There was a way to do it. They knew how, like, scientifically, not just by guessing, but scientifically, they knew how much rest you needed, what you needed to drink, what you needed to eat. They tested your blood. What if you were low in anything? They would compensate. They would test your heart rate, how quick your heart rate goes up, how quick it comes down. All done scientifically, not just because, yo, get out there and run. It's good for you to run. Okay, but how much do I run? I don't know, 3 miles. You know, we just came up with numbers. We weren't instructed otherwise, right? So his system is old school. Like, he doesn't use any fandangled fancy equipment. This isn't Ivan Drago stuff that you saw in the movies. He doesn't do any of that. But everything that he does do is based on science. And I think that's one of the things that separates, you know, him and Usyk. I think that's one thing that separates them from the rest of the field. But at the end of the day, no matter what method of training you have, no matter what you do, at the end of the day, you have to be able to fight. You have to have the skill set. You have to have the ability. And to have that, you have to have teachers. You have to have great trainers who teach you the art of boxing. And I think that's one of the things that is missing nowadays, or we're just not seeing enough of it. Because while there are some great fighters around, and great, there's fighters around today who could have competed in any era, Lomachenko, of course, being one of them. But the problem is, back in the day, you had 10 guys in the top 10 who could fight. Now you don't. Now you have one guy who's great, and the other guys are really ordinary. And there's just not that pool. And I think proof of that is what we're seeing on the North American scene from Canada, from the USA, on what we're doing on the amateur scene. There's no medals, no performances. The USA used to be the king of amateur boxing. They were the powerhouse. Them, the Cubans, the Russians.
Well, Olympic boxing used to be the be-all, end-all, right?
That's right.
And now it's sort of an afterthought.
Correct.
Yeah, basically, I guess you're not already pro. You're not good enough, right? So, all right, there's so much stuff I want to get to, including about Lomachenko and others, actually. Okay, you know, there's not even enough time to get everything we want to get to, but we'll just keep on firing off the questions to world champion trainer, cup man, entrepreneur, a TV host, radio host, Russ Amber kicking it on Morenci Unfiltered. Get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Barenzi Unfiltered, the podcast continues. Great stuff so far with the coach, Russ Ambers. We're talking boxing, sports, and life. And, you know, my hometown of Montreal that I haven't lived in a little while, but I've always been proud of the fight history of Montreal. And, you know, I've known for years. I mean, there's more fights produced out of Quebec than there is in Nevada. On a weekly basis, and people just don't realize what a fight hub it is. So, Russ, you're training. You get into this when you're 18. Would you say that, you know, your first, when everything started to come together for you, was it when you met the Grant brothers? And tell me about that, because for me, and that's sort of like I knew of you and stuff, and hell, I even went to LaSalle High briefly, but I got kicked out, Russ. What a shock, huh?
So, well, at least you went. At least you went.
Yeah, no, that's why I did. That's why I got kicked out. I didn't go enough.
Okay.
Yeah. But they were legends in LaSalle, right? Like, people are like, yeah. Oh, those guys are badass. Like, and they're like, yeah, they live the right way. Like, I remember even as kids, they were like, yeah, they don't. And I wanted to ask you, so the differences between, like, the Hilton brothers and, like, how they live and the Grant brothers. So, let's just spend a couple of minutes. Tell me about your relationship with the Grant brothers and what it meant to win the first championship.
Well, look, I mean, before we go to the championships, I mean, the first time I met the Grants and Otis I met first, he was 12, maybe 11. And I wasn't even with him at that time. That's the first time I met him. And he fought a fighter that I was working with that Clam Chowder will tell you about, who, God forbid, you know, he passed away, you know, God rest his soul, he passed away, recently became a world-class referee named Marlon Wright.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I had just gotten started into coaching boxing, and I was training Marlon Wright. I was an assistant trainer to his trainer, Bernie Ewinson, but I was an assistant, and Marlon fought Otis when they were 11 years old, and Marlon beat Otis. And it was about a year later when I got an invite to go and become an assistant trainer at the gym where Howard and Otis had been training. And they had been in boxing for about a year at this point, okay? So I got an invite to go there, and I went there. And literally, I got there on a Friday, confirmed to everybody, you know, that I was introduced to the whole gym, saying that I'm going to be the new trainer here. Everyone was happy. Yeah, great. Monday, I found out that the guy who was the head coach decided he was giving up boxing. You know, he couldn't do it anymore, and that I took over, and I ended up inheriting the gym, you know, where, you know, by luck, which I guess things have a strange way of working out.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's when I started coaching Howard and Otis. So I started coaching, you know, Otis. Howard was 14, Otis was 13. That's how young they were when I started. And from then we went on to, you know, Pan Am Silver Games, silver medal for Pan Am Games, silver medal for Otis, World Championship silver for Howard, Olympic game representation for Howard, Commonwealth Games gold medalist.
I'm looking at some of these fights. So just like some of the locations, the Riviera, Las Vegas, Willie Monroe. Were you there for that? Like,
oh, yeah, but you're way ahead now. You're way ahead.
Oh, I'm getting, yeah, you're okay. I want to go back. So, yeah. Jeez, so his first fight, Montreal form. Pretty crazy to fight his first fight in a Montreal form. John Gross.
Yep, that was the first fight after the Olympics. The Olympics finished that year in September in Korea, and we turned pro, and they were running a show. I don't even remember who was the headline on that. I think it was a Roger Martel promotion, if I'm not mistaken. Roger put a promoter up here. He put the show on, and Howard and Otis made their pro debut on that card. That was the start of the pro career. And then from then on, the Montreal fight scene, you know, basically dried up. And if you take a look at Otis's record, I think you can count on one hand the number of times, you know, coming up that he fought in Montreal. And it was only at the end of his career after coming back from the car accident where he fought more. But prior to that, you know, like I said, you could count literally on one hand out of 35 pro fights or whatever. I think there was like five that were in Montreal scattered all over the place. And, you know, his career was on the road. He was a road warrior, and he won the world championship in Sheffield, England. And he had been on the road his whole life, including, like you said, Vegas, everywhere. Philadelphia, when we fought Artie McLeod, Atlantic City, all over the place.
Russ Amber with Morenci Unfiltered. Great stuff. As we go down boxing history's memory lane. So I bring up the Hiltons to people, and I talk about, you know, Montreal. And you know, there's the urban legend, so to speak, of Mike Tyson saying that, you know, these brothers scare Mike Tyson even, like, type thing. Like Customato was like, you got to get these guys away from Mike. Like, these guys are crazier than he is. But I remember, listen, my father – did time in the 70s, and when he got out, he became like a counselor, because he lived that life. He lived a tough life, and he worked in Point St. Charles, the Point St. Charles YMCA. And this ain't your YMCA where, yes, this ain't, there was no yoga in those days in the Point, let me tell you, Russ. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And he told me, I remember meeting. He said, this is Davey Hilton Sr., and he teaches boxing here to people. And I remember him telling me, he goes, yeah, this guy is like, this guy's nuts. Like, I remember he's when a kid. And I was like, oh, I want to box. And my father was like, you don't want to be around this guy. And he's not the best parent, so to speak, even at that time. But the Hilton as fighters, just that tragic tale of just, you know, blown talent, isn't it? But how good could they have been, Russ, if not, I mean, hell, they still won championships, but.
No, absolutely.
For,
I mean, you have two world champions.
For people that don't know the Hilton story, like in like 3-4 minutes, tell us the Hilton story. And what was your perspective being in Montreal seeing it?
Well, listen, I mean, we always, as with anybody, you know, just like a fighter who stays on too long, We remember the bad. We remember the defeats. We remember the bad, and we forget the good. And listen, the Hiltons were responsible for one of the fighters responsible for boxing being a mainstream sport in Montreal. They were covered by guys like Tim Burton, the Gazette. I mean, they were of legendary status as fighters in Montreal, a fighting family of brothers who had success and were good. Now, you started off your question by asking how good they were. And I have this answer that I have given time and time again to kind of put into context just how good they were. When someone asks me, who's the best fighter Canada ever produced? You obviously have to turn around and look at achievement, right? And if you look at achievement, you have to say, well, Lennox Lewis, you know, pretty much did it all. And he was a Canadian product, you know, raised in Canada, learned to box in Canada, won a gold medal for Canada, you know, won world heavyweight championship, even though he didn't fight out of Canada at that point. You know, we sort of adopted him. He won the Olympic gold for Canada. You know, Eric Lucas, Arturo Gatti, you know, great fighters on the world scene, you know. We've formed a lot of great fighters.
A lot of tough guys, right, that lost. Sort of the guys, the popular guy, Arturo Gatti, George Chavallo, right? Hey, look, man, he went the distance with the champ, right? But as you talk about the achievement and the success, is different.
But then you have guys like Jean Pascal. You know, Jean Pascal goes on to become, you know, light heavyweight champion of the world. Adonis Stevenson. I mean,
another guy
great
that you
fighters.
Worked with, right? Guys that you've all worked with.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Now, but here's the thing. If we talk about talent, if you tell me who's the greatest fighter Canada ever produced on sheer talent. Oh, and let's also add, prior to naming it, let's not forget guys like Nicky Furlano as well, for when first guy to go 15 rounds with Aaron Pryor. Great fighter in his own right, Nicky Furlano. But if you talk about talent, the gifted, pure talent, the best we've ever produced was Davey Hilton Jr. And there's no doubt about that in my mind. And to prove that, in the early 80s, or mid-80s, let's say, or early to mid-80s, when the welterweight division was ruled by guys like Marlon Starling, Donald Curry, Colin Jones, Milton McCrory, when these guys were around, Boxing Magazine did an interview, said, who's the best welterweight in the world? And, of course, all the experts weighed in on who they thought was the best welterweight in the world. And then they asked Angelo Dundee, and I don't think we need to introduce who Angelo Dundee is, right? So they asked Angelo, who's the best welterweight in the world? And Angelo said, best welterweight in the world, Davey Hilton Jr. And everybody said, what? Who are you talking about? That's how good this kid was, that Angelo Dundee back then knew he was the best middleweight, the best welterweight in the world. Fast forward now to the year 2000. 2000, 15 years after turning, 16 years maybe after turning pro, whatever it was, he wins the championship of the world at super middleweight.
It's a good point. It's a good point, Russ, that if not for the we're not talking about his life decisions, but if not for that, like the span in between his success to come back, I was there that night. I was in the building. I was at the Molson Center, and my father rest in peace. And it was a weird atmosphere in the building. Like, and yeah, it should have been. That's like a Disney movie almost. That night he won in 2000, right? It wasn't, but it almost should have been. Like, it would have been, right?
And what people don't know is he barely was able to get heavy enough to make the 168-pound limit. They had to put rolls of quarters in his pocket so that when he got on the scale, he would be over 160. Because you have to be over 160 to fight in the super middleweight division. So to get that, he had to put rolls in his pocket to get into the super middleweight division to fight Dingin Tabella for the title. So, you know, truly great fighter and a gifted guy. I mean, as boxing-wise. And he had the charm. Like, he was the you know, our Sugar Ray Leonard in terms of charisma, in terms of charm, in terms of how he dealt with people, how he smiled with them.
It's hard to explain to people in a sense like that, but you're right. Like, you know, I've been watching a lot of, you know, 3 a.m. and stuff, you know, the mob specials come on, right? And they say there was no one, like the media and people were just sort of attracted to John Gotti. Like when he walked into a room, and you know, people don't realize that with the Hiltons too. Like, yeah, these guys can sell out a 20,000 seat arena.
Well, Davey could, anyways. Davey of them all was special. Davey was the special one. Matthew was a debilitating puncher. I mean, a devastating puncher. But Davey had it all. Davey had the footwork. Davey had the flash. Davey had the style. Davey had the speed. Davey had it all.
Those nights, it's before my time. I was younger. But those nights at the Montreal Forum, it's almost like, you know what I mean? When they talk about there's nothing more special than, like, dude, that MSG when, like, it's Puerto Rico versus Mexico type thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just sort of, no. It's not just a robbery. This is real shit. Like, it's sort of, this is real. What was it like, the French versus English at the Forum in those days?
You know, I never got into that because I hated that part of
marketing
of the English French thing. Yeah, I didn't like that because the French fans loved Davey Hilton.
That's what made them special. You're right. That's right. The white Irish guys that don't even speak French were loved, right?
Yeah, exactly. They were loved because of the way they fought, and they and Hilton did try to speak French.
Yeah,
and
they did.
The
I was great.
Loved that
I know,
about
I know,
you know
exactly.
And it was,
and
the,
I love
it
that.
Was more the,
I loved it. It was just that total white guy Point St. Charles French accent too. It was great.
Yeah, and it was the people around them that turned it into a English French thing. You know, it was never the Hiltons. They were loved by the French fans here. That's let's face it. They were the one. The French fans are the ones who bought the tickets, and they loved watching Davey. So, yeah, those certainly were days, boy. And I don't know if we'll ever see those ones again, brother.
So we're with the coach Russ Amber. So how many fights have you worked with Lomachenko right now? Is it 10, 12? I know.
I've been with him since starting in his fourth professional fight. So I've been with him since fight number four.
All right. So yeah, it's been a hell of a ride. So what's the schedule right now? Everything obviously is up in the air. September, you know, September is quite a ways away right now. I'm looking at the odds and I see Lomachenko minus 400 against Lopez.
What does that mean? What does that mean in the way I understand it? Because, you know, I don't know what that.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm getting flashbacks of, yeah, on Friday night fights when I used to bring this stuff up. You're like, Renzi, I don't know what the hell that means. When I was like, yeah, it's plus 180. And I remember Iceman did. Iceman, I used to from the streets. Iceman was like, come on, Russ.
Yeah, I still don't know what. I remember when fights used to be, you know, you were a 7-1 underdog. That's what I remember, you know, like 5-1, 4-1.
No, so that's what it is. So Vasily's a 4-1 favorite.
Well, listen, he's a gifted guy. It's going to be hard. You know, those odds would drop as they normally do if money starts to come in on Lopez. As you know, those odds will drop. But if you just ask me who's got to be the favorite going in, you know, you've got it. Lomachenko's got to be the favorite. His pedigree speaks for itself. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, what he's accomplished as an amateur, what he's accomplished as a pro. He's the veteran. He's a gifted fighter. You know, I think it's normal, without being disrespectful to Lopez, I think it's perfectly normal that Loma's the favorite going into the fight.
No, I don't have any problem with the number either, actually. And I like Lomachenko here. So talk to us about him. We briefly talked about his training a little bit. And, you know, there's something you said, well, he's in it from the old school Russian school. We're going to take a quick break and we'll have one more segment with the coach, Russ Amber, but the toughest man in mixed martial arts right now is Khabib.
Right.
And, you know, he's from Kazakhstan and same thing, just very disciplined in his approach. You know, like how some champions, like, you know, let's say Americans, Canadians, and I've seen it firsthand, and you see it in MMA even now, Russ, where guys win a little bit. Suddenly they're cheating on their wife. Now they punch someone in a bar. And, like, it just sort of leads. Or sometimes even just fame and money can soften people. But, man, the Russians and the Eastern Europeans, they've got ice in their veins, guys. Right? So you wait for them to, like, sort of mentally weaken. They don't mentally weaken. So I'm interested in that point of view. And I got a couple other takes, and we definitely got to talk a little Expo baseball with the coach before we get him out of here. Marunzi Unfiltered. Get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get on the grid. Marenzi Unfiltered, the podcast continues. We could talk all night with the coach, Russ Amber, but he is a busy man. So we were just talking about Lomachenko going into the break there. And I, you know, is it the work ethic? You talk about the science, but you can't teach a fighter, right? Like, you know, I think the difference is some guys are athletes and other guys are fighters. And it just seems, and you can't blanket coverage everybody from certain parts of the world, but it seems to me, Russ, that if I look at mixed martial arts, they're terrorizing people right now. You know what I mean? They have the soundball wrestling. They're tough as hell. Like, Khabib grew up wrestling bears, man, literally and figuratively. Like, there's videos of him when he's 7 years old in a backyard wrestling bears. So, you know, talk to me about Lomachenko's mental toughness. And is he in the same vein, or is it a little bit more modern? Like, talk to me about that.
Well, look, let me bring it back. Let me put things into a little bit of a different perspective for you, if you want to talk about the Russians, as you say. And what we have to remember, Gabe, and this is something that people today can't fathom, don't realize this, but during our youth, during our time, the world was divided into two parts. There was the Western world, and then there was the Eastern Bloc. And the Eastern Bloc never delved in any professional sports. So technically, everything that the Western world did, which we laid claim to being the best in the world at, we were really only the best of half the world, because the other half wasn't open. And if we use the Olympics as the measuring stick of success, meaning that when you take guys like Sugar Ray Leonard or any of those guys from the 76 team, or Roy Jones, or any of the great fighters that came out of the American team who went on to have exceptional professional careers, it only stands to reason that the same fighters who won those gold medals back in the day for the Soviet Union would have been expected to have the same type of success, or the Cubans for that matter, right?
Yeah,
had they
yeah.
been allowed to turn pro. So right now, there's not only Lomachenko you have to look at, and it's not just MMA or whatever. I mean, there's guys like Golovkin, there's fighters, the Klitschko brothers, Usyk. Like, there is so many, the boxing almost today, their success in boxing is almost dominated. And if not dominated, they are contenders in just about every weight class by Eastern European fighters and former countries that were part of the Soviet bloc, who are now dominating the professional boxing scene. And they couldn't do it for so long. They were not allowed to do that. So, you know, I think all great fighters have mental toughness, all great fighters who have success. You can't have success without it. And I don't think that's from a certain geographical position on earth. I think it's part of your DNA makeup of being an outstanding athlete in any sport, and maybe not even in sport, but in any business or anything that you're in, there has to be a certain amount of mental toughness that allows you to succeed. It's very difficult to have success without having that. You know, you mentioned snooker or whatever. These guys are like, they got ice water flowing through their veins. Golfers, when they're putting, you know, 6 foot putt, and this is the difference between $1 million or $325,000. It's massive. You know, you got to have ice water going through your veins. There's mental toughness there in all sports. But this is something that's very, very, you know, inherent in great fighters, in great athletes. So I really don't think that this is only because he's Ukrainian or Russian. You know what I mean? I really don't think
yeah,
that.
But yeah. No, I just want, yeah. The training habits are
different. Yeah.
Yeah. The personality seemed to be a little bit different too. I mean,
yes, much more respect. I don't know about MMA because
like, look at Triple
that,
G, just how slick and classy he is. Like, he's not getting kicked out of press conferences like Broner. He's not beating people up like Gervonta Davis. You know what I mean?
No, exactly. And Loma's the same. Usyk is the same. There's a certain upbringing and class about them in what they do. So you're absolutely right about that. And I think it's great. You know, there's not these showboating antics. They're not punching anybody at the weigh-in, you know, like. It's
what did you think
clean,
of Deontay Wilder? I'm sorry to cut you off, but there's just so many things I want to throw in there. So what do you hear when a guy says after the fact, wow, my costume made my legs weak?
Do you remember a gentleman here in Montreal? He was a fight figure. You heard him on the radio talk shows, an elderly man named Roy Hamilton. You remember Roy Hamilton?
Yes, yeah. I remember hearing with Ted Teven, yep.
That's right. And Roy used to always say, what do you expect from a pig but a grunt? And I worked with Deontay Wilder for 5 years and was unceremoniously dismissed for no reason. And I'm still good friends with his trainer and manager, JD's. And I'm very good friends with his other trainer, Mark Breland, good friends of mine. But don't get me started on Wilder, because if I can't say something good, I'd rather not say nothing at all. So let's just leave it at that.
All right. I just want to throw it out. So one thing about I wanted to put in perspective is when people after the fight said that Tyson Fury has the best footwork out of like any heavyweight anywhere, like they were saying like no heavyweight would be in any time almost would be able to deal with him because of his size. Is that true? Is that hyperbole? Like, you brought up Lennox Lewis, and I'm not one of these automatic guys that says everyone in the old days are better, right? I mean, our guy Mike Bossy told me that the Islanders would get crushed by new teams. So, not everyone in the old days is better, but what about Tyson Fury?
I'll tell you, it's very impressive
what he's done. It seems like the guy gets better with age, which is very impressive. He's better every fight.
Listen, Tyson Fury succeeded in destroying every myth that all of us old school trainers believe, that the bigger you are, the actual worse you're going to be, you know. And they even did it, you know, in regards to Klitschko, you know, that they were very one-dimensional.
Oh, coach, I was an idiot tonight. The day of the fight, I'm like, oh, he came in, he's massive. And that was his advantage that he was that big.
Who, you mean Fury?
Yeah. I thought he was, too big coming into the fight, the last fight against Wilder.
But that's not even the point. The point is that he moves like he was 200 pounds, 195 pounds. You know, his abilities and what he does athletically for the size of man that he is, I cannot think of any fighter in history. I don't even know if I can think of any human in any sport who had that size, that massive size on him, and performed with such agility and grace. Now, if you can name me somebody in a sport who did that, I'd really like to see it, because I can't think of anybody of that size. And this was supposed to be the unbreakable rule, you know, that the bigger you are, you'll be big, you'll have size, you'll be strong, but guys who have skill can move in and out, they got speed on you, they got you. Well, this guy proved he can move like Ali, you know, and I think that's something very special. So I throw that out there to your listeners, and I throw it out to you, and I'm not as a challenge, just because my brain is old and I have no more room on the hard drive up there, but I can't think of anybody in any sport with that size who had that agility, that fluidness, that athleticism that Tyson Fury possesses. And I think that's one of the reasons why this guy has a shot at beating anybody, any heavyweight that ever lived. This guy has a shot to beat them all.
Wow. Strong words from the coach, Russ Amber, right there. Listen, you've been a cup man, an equipment, entrepreneur, rival boxing. You've had, your gear, cup man, trainer. So you know everything what it takes to be in the corner. All aspects of being in a corner with a fighter. Floyd Mayweather, I didn't realize that he says he's serious about this, that, and I don't know if it's the passing of people around him right now, and he figures, you know what, I want to continue this legacy of Mayweather's and trainers. But what do you make of Floyd? Do you buy this? Do you think, is Floyd Mayweather, is he going to be all in on this? And I read an interview with Freddie Roach about this, and they said one thing that Floyd's going to have to learn is how to lose, and he's never lost. He doesn't lose. And so what's your take on Floyd Mayweather becoming a trainer? And let's hockey, like the greatest players, Maurice Richard wanted to kill the players. Magic Johnson like smashed a phone and said, why don't you get it? And that's the biggest thing. He's going to have to realize they're not you. So what's your take on Floyd?
Okay, let's back up just 1 second about he's never lost. And, it's funny how we don't we don't point out his losses, but he has
lost. Oh, you're
lost.
Okay. Good and point. He, yeah, yeah.
He lost as a promoter, you know, where he had fighters that are signed to his promotional banner that he had under contract, that he maneuvered into certain fights, who failed, who lost. But he was there at the pre-fight press conference, but wasn't there at the post-fight press conference when they lost.
Well, it's like his bets. It's like his bets, Russ. He's a big sports bettor. Yeah. He posts right. his wins all the time. Hey, I had this, but he bets every day. Yeah, he doesn't post the losses.
Yes, correct. correct. So, you know, like that's the first thing. The second thing is, let's understand right off the bat, my dear friend Buddy McGirt yeah. would tell you this, that success in the ring as a fighter doesn't automatically translate into success as a trainer. Now, the two different trainers.
No, we see this with all sports. Great with players sports, aren't great right? coaches.
That's right. So now there are a few who make it. Buddy McGirt is one who made it. Robert Garcia is another one who made it. You know, they made the transition from being world champion fighters, multiple world champion fighters, into trainers of multiple world champions as coaches. Now, that's not to say Mayweather doesn't have the knowledge. We know he has the knowledge. We understand it. Now, this is the case often with fighters, with fighters who become trainers. It's not just about having the knowledge. It's about your ability to teach. And teaching is just as much an art as doing. And it requires a certain innate skill. It requires a certain talent to be able to take the product you have in front of you, to take the fighter you have, and be able to teach and train him and transmit the information that you have in your head into him so that he understands it and makes it work for himself. This is going to be what is going to determine Mayweather's success. Not because he was a great fighter, not because he was undefeated, not because he did what he did. And that's why Roger, his uncle who passed away, God rest his soul, Roger was a great trainer for him because he knew how to make it work for him. That worked, and that was the key to success. When Floyd will find the guy who he's able to connect with and able to transmit that information with, that's when we'll see what the success Floyd will have as a trainer. Do I think Floyd is going to be a guy who's going to take kids off, kids coming into the gym, take them to the state championships, then take them to the national championships, then go on the national team and do that whole road that he did? No, he's not doing that. He's going to look for a star-studded blue-chip prospect, yeah. and he's going to come in there and say, look what I did. That's what he's going to do. He's not going to develop somebody. And I wish he would, you know, because that to me, and that's why I think Emmanuel Stewart, God rest his soul, is so held in such high esteem, and John Davenport, because those are guys who took fighters from the grassroots, from the very beginning. And that's the thing that I feel most proud
like
about
you've
myself
done.
To say that
yeah, like
I
you've
can,
done.
Yeah, yeah. I feel proud about being able to do that. And a lot of fighters today, a lot of trainers, a lot of guys who are in the Hall of Fame as great trainers never, ever did that, ever. They took fighters who were already, you know, gifted prodigies and were happened to be in the corner for their wins or their careers and, you know, said, wow, what a great trainer. But don't tell me what you can do with great fighters. You know, like my greatest, when I talk about achievement as a trainer, it's never about what I did with great, gifted, talented fighters. I care about what I did with those guys who nobody gave a hell about. No one cared. And they were not targeted. They were not blue chip. And overachieved with those guys. That, to me, is the sign of a great trainer.
The coach, Russ Amber. So, Russ, we've got a couple of minutes left here before we get you out of here. Nobody loved the Expos as much as you did. I've given up on the Canadians. Like, I don't even get frustrated anymore. And
I've gone anti-Canadian, by
the
way.
You know, me too. Like, I'm not, yeah, I'm not, like, I've tapped out, Russ. You know what it was?
They asked me, go ahead.
Go on. No, sorry. They asked you to go on. I was going to say the PK Subban stuff just to last. Like, I'm just done. Like, I
me
don't.
Too. Me
I
too.
Don't deal with it. I don't care anymore. It's one of those deals. But what they asked you to do what?
Me too. The PK thing was the thing that completely, you know, was the last nail in the coffin. Never mind what they did. You know, there was all accumulation of things in my lifetime, which exactly. I still stuck around with. You know, the way they treated LaFleur, what they did to Boom Boom Jeffrion by waiting so long to retire his jersey, and then the guy dies on the day they retire him because they waited so long.
Dude, my grandfather played with Doug Harvey. Doug Harvey died broke, bro. Like, my grandfather played for the Canadians. I could tell you stories. They said Howie Morenz died in a mental ward. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Patrick Waugh was unceremoniously let go, you know, for no fault of his own.
Yeah, for me, and I saw it coming. Like, you get rid of Subban for Michel freaking Therrien? And they're like, the guys in a room. The guys in a room suck, all right? They're not as good as
correct.
Him.
Correct. That's right. That's the thing. If he was the ninth best player on the team and he was doing that, then I'd say, yeah, get rid of him. But until you're as good as him, then you got no voice. Shut up. You know, he's earned the right to do whatever the hell he wants and play whatever music he wants in the dressing room. And I've always said that if it was up to me, I'd have walked into that dressing room and I'd have said, gentlemen, you see this guy wearing the pads over there? That's our goalie. He ain't going nowhere. You see the black guy sitting next to him? He's our defenseman. He ain't going anywhere either. Any one of you mothers got a problem in here with these guys? Tell me now. I got tickets here to wherever you want to go, because I'm going to find me 22 other guys who want to come and play with these guys.
Great way
of
putting
it. Not vice versa.
And we got less than a minute here. I just told a story the other night. Kobe, may rest in peace, passed away. And everyone, Kobe's an angel. Kobe was a hard guy to deal with. So Kobe's feuding with Shaquille O'Neal. He's feuding with Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson's like a 9-time champion or whatever, right? Live with Jordan for all those years. Kobe's ego's getting out of control. Phil Jackson goes to Jerry Buss, who owns the Lakers, and he goes, we got to trade this kid. He goes, he doesn't get along with Shaq. He's talking back to me. He's all about him. Jerry Buss goes, well, I'll tell you what, if anyone's going to be gone, it won't be Kobe. Phil Jackson realized, well, all right, I better deal with it. And you know what? We saw what happened. Kobe went on to win a couple of more championships. Russ, you're a champion. God bless you. Thanks for your time, sir.
Thanks, Gabe. We'll talk to you soon, but let's not take so long next time.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.